And one of my professors was Howard Zinn, and he was telling us about Seabrook Nuclear Power Station and why he was going to the protests there and how it was connected to the nuclear weapons industry and to capitalism and all these ideas. And so I started going to the meetings in Cambridge with Clamshell Alliance meetings and Coalition for Direct Action at Seabrook, and started going up to protest. And eventually on May 24th, 1980, there was this occupation attempt where we're going to try to take over the nuclear power station construction site and just move on and live there and deny them the right to actually build this nuclear power station. And one of my friends in my affinity group got arrested. He was the media spokesperson. The cops knew who he was by the name under him on TV. And so he got accused of assaulting a police officer. And he was also a law student at Boston University. And so we thought, well, we better raise money for his legal defense. And the first thing that came to mind was we were going to bake cookies and brownies and sell them outside of BU or at Harvard Square or something like that. And so we go out, we sell our cookies, and we make like $5 or $6. And I'm like, wow, this is going to be really tough trying to raise legal support for this, for Brian this way. And another project that we have with this band called Emma, Emma Golden, and we have a moving company called Smooth Move. And so we're moving families around town, apartment to apartment. And this one man who was throwing out this posters, which said, wouldn't it be a beautiful day if the Pentagon had to hold a bake sale to buy a B-1 bomb? I thought, wow, what a great idea. Why don't we, you know, can we have your poster? And they're like, yeah, yeah, you can have it. And so we went to the Central Square Army Navy Surplus Store, bought ourselves some military uniforms, went out with the little poster with our bake goods, and we're telling people, yeah, we're trying to buy a B-1 bomb, or can you buy a couple of these? Off. up some nest. And then we would take all that food every morning in Emma, and then we would drive it around to all the housing projects and daycare centers and Rosie's Place, about women's shelter. We'd take them food. There's an alcoholism center. And we had like this regular schedule where we deliver all this uncooked produce and bread and bagels and muffins and raw tofu and stuff like that. And then in the afternoons, we would take whatever was left over, make it into a meal, and we would serve it on the streets. Or we would take food to protests at the Boston Commons or down in Washington, D.C. or New York City. And at one point, there was a, in the summers, we would get so elaborate. We would have people come out with, like, we had two friends with drum sets. So they would be doing drumming to attract a crowd. We would have these little Super 8 movie cameras, so we would go around and video, make like little plays that we would videotape or make movies of, and then we'd edit them. We'd project them on screens that we tied into the trees. We would make giant puppets. We would have like, we'd pretend like some people in the crowd were just people in the crowd yelling at us, or, causing trouble, and get the audience involved in the performances. And we give out food at these events. There often was a theme to the food that we had. And we did this pretty much like all summer long in Harvard Square, late into the evenings, on at least Thursday, probably Saturday nights. And then one day, this there was this thing called the Pepsi Challenge. And it was on TV, and they would hire college students to open up the cans of Coke and let them go flat the night before, and then they would set up their little tent. So they set up right next to us at Harvard Square, and everybody saw it on TV, so they're all excited to get in line. And one of our moving jobs had been New England Free Press, and we took all the publications they didn't want. And one of the, so one of the publications was a brochure on Coca-Cola's hiring death squads to kill labor organizers in Guatemala. And around the same time, we also got like these little Dixie cups from this dentist. And so we didn't really know what to do with them because they were really kind of too small for a meal. But we thought, wow, if the Pepsi Challenge next to us, why don't we do the tofu challenge? So we made tofu smoothies with the fruit we were collecting. We would stand there, and the line would pass by our table and go, hey, take the tofu challenge. There's more nutrition in this one cup of tofu smoothie than all the Pepsi products on earth. And here's a brochure about Coca-Cola hiring death squads in Guatemala. Change our name to Bread Not Bombs. Like, oh no, I'm changing. living in the park, so they're helping those people. And then there's a church on Monday, and a church that serves on Sunday, and a church that serves on Saturday. But there's no meals at all on Monday. So why don't we set up at the entrance to Goldgate Park every Monday morning at noon? And because a lot of tourists come by there, there's all the people living in the park, and there's all the business people going down to enjoy their lunch at that noon time. So we go down there, and we're giving out food, and it's like a really cool scene with like a couple hundred people hanging out with us, eating. And this hippie comes by, and he says, "Oh, wow, you can get a permit if you just send a letter to the Recreation and Parks Department." And so we, at our next meeting, go, "Oh, we have to send a letter off to get a little permit. Like, you know, it's probably a nice government and all." And so it turned out that the police had gone to this man and told him that they were going to shut down the zoo station if he didn't get rid of us. And we didn't realize this was the case. So on August 15th of 1988, 45 riot police emerged from the woods of Golden Gate Park and arrested 9 of us for serving food without this permit. And the police had told the San Francisco Chronicle that they were going to do this, so they came out with a cameraman and a reporter. And the next day, on Tuesday, there was a big report on page 9 of the Chronicle, 9 volunteers arrested serving homeless in Goldgate Park. So people start calling us up, going, "How can we get arrested serving food? This is so cool."
Homeless camps in the middle of the night. They took more people's belongings.
street. And so people that came to eat said, can you come across the street and join us in our tent city protest? We really need some solidarity. So we agreed to take off our camp stove and our equipment and everything and move in front of City Hall. And so we started a 24-hour-a-day vegetarian restaurant there. And then every day at noon, when the politicians and the workers came out of City Hall, we would have like a homeless ballet or homeless poetry readings and homeless concerts and things like that. And Tiananmen Square is happening in China at this time, so the people living in our tent city call it Tiananmen Square. And this is happening every day. We start to do our own trash pickup, but the city refuses to pick up trash in the area. We're like sweeping the sidewalks to keep it all clean, to show how tidy people are that live in the streets, and this whole event having these ballets, and there's a lot of media attention. So the Fleet Athletics League decides to hire a carnival, and they bring a carnival in about 20 days into this. So we're allowed to camp with bumper cars and Ferris wheels and all these crazy things going on. And the mayor still hasn't gotten rid of us, so he announces that he's got a solution for the homeless. He's going to open this abandoned auto dealership down the street on Polk Street. All the good homeless will be living in the shelter. Anybody not living in there is a criminal. They're bad homeless. So they bring Weather Riot police, order us to take down the tents. People do. They all go down to the new shelter. And it turns out that you can't bring your wife or your children in the shelter. It's only for men. You can't have your pets, obviously. That's a big problem. You can only have two little bags of belongings. If you have like too much belongings, you have to just throw them away. And you have to bring your own cardboard box to sleep on. So a lot of people are like, oh, this is not really a satisfactory solution to homelessness in San Francisco. And so we agreed that we're going to start serving meals now every lunch and every dinner in front of City Hall. So we go out for the first lunch, and riot police come, they arrest us and take all the food. So we go, wow, we better come up with a different strategy. So for dinner, we come out, and we bring a little bit of rice and beans, a little bit of salad, some bread, and three or four people get arrested. And then a couple of more people come out with a little bit more rice and beans, a little more salad, a little bit more bread, and they get arrested. And now they're taking those guys down to the police precinct. The captain's, oh, good, if you stop those enough boss people, that's great work. And then we come out with all the rest of the food and feed everybody that arrived. And so we start doing this every day, and the people like to know that they're going to get fed, and we know we're going to like lose like 6-8 people to jail. Melbourne, Australia, putting up talking of John Fisher starts up, and there's a group in London, there's groups all over the United States, there's now Montreal, Quebec City, Toronto, several in British Columbia, and now there's quite a bunch of Una Moms chapters going. And we learned that Chevron is going to host the official celebration for the 500th anniversary of Columbus coming to the New World. And the same as the city. And then we learned that Native Americans have met at our circle in Alaska and have announced that they're going to protest that 500 years is enough. And so we put out the word amongst the Puna Bonds people, would you be interested in participating in the gathering in October of 92? And so a lot of people responded and said they would. And about around that same time, this publishing company, New Society, had seen the 7 steps to starting from that bonfire, and it asked us to write a book called Food Not Bombs, How to Feed the Hungry and Build Community. That's like a recipe for vegan meals for 100, things like that, the history of food bombs and philosophy and how to get arrested and all that. So we pumped that book, gets published just in time for our first Food Not Bombs gathering, and about 70 people show up. And we discussed, like, what isn't Food Not Bombs group? Do we have any, like, kind of agreements? And we decide that there'd be 3 basic principles, that the food would always be vegetarian, free to anyone without restriction, whether they're rich or poor, drunk or sober, that we would be, that there'd be no, like, headquarters or presidents or directors or anything like that. Each group would be autonomous and independent and would work by consensus without leaders. And that we would be dedicated to nonviolent social change and direct action. So we then get books to everybody and decide that we're all going to return to our homes after the protest and start new chapters. We then cook a bunch of food for the protest. We take it down to Aquatic Park. Several of the elders of the Aboriginal or Native people, they decided Columbus wasn't going to land this time, so when he tries to land in the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, they just push him back out into the bay. And we had this huge action, feed everybody, and then return to start new chapters and add more days to our schedules in the cities where we're already organizing. And not long after that, the chief of police that had been arrested, Frank Jordan, decided that he would run for mayor on the anti-homeless ticket. And he said if he was elected mayor of San Francisco, he would round up all the homeless, he would put them in a work camp south of the city in San Mateo County, and he would put a sign over the top saying, work shall make you free. So, of course, he was really popular and he got elected. Part of his campaign was Friends with Frank, where he gave out free hot dogs in the parks. He made sure homeless people knew of everyone in the Friends with Frank section so they could get a free hot dog. And he gets elected, so starts his program called Quality of Life Enforcement Matrix Program. The Clinton administration was really grateful about this project, and so they gave San Francisco 2 airplanes with thermal imaging devices so they could fly over the parks and see the body heat coming off of the sleeping bags and blankets and know where there's concentrations of homeless people. So we go to the American Civil Liberties Union and we get a video camera. And we videotape one of the first breaks in Civic Center Plaza during our lunch. And we get video of the police ordering everyone to take their shoes off and throw them in the garbage trucks. We get video of them grabbing people's blankets and suitcases and backpacks and throwing them away. The mental health people declare some people mentally ill and have them taken off to a mental hospital. A few people are arrested. And so we get video of this, and finally we get video of this grandmother crying as she's wrestling to keep her blanket from the cops. And we put this on TV. Give it to all the TV companies, but the Oakland station was the only one that broadcast it. And the mayor was furious. So he goes to the city attorney, Lee Rennie, and he asked to get an injunction against us serving food without permits. Then he goes to the Recreation Parks Department, and has them delete the permit process. So he's now start getting arrested every day for felony conspiracy to serve free food in violation of a court order. He gets to spend the night in jail, maybe a week in jail, he's have to go before a judge. We start the program, risk arrest one day a month with Food Not Bombs again. the priests come out. Now they're more organized. They have like a whole group called Religious Witness of Homeless People. They come out and get arrested. The teachers' unions get arrested. The whole thing happens again. The lawyers come out with their banner. They don't get arrested.
Thank you.
right-wing radio talk show host turned politician was militantly anti-Vietnam, anti-homeless, and her hate just hated us. So when I arrived with the letter with my friend, she just screamed at us and slammed the door really hard. And the glass broke out of it. She slammed it so hard it cut my hand. So I went to my truck to go to the doctor, or go to the hospital, and I got captured and arrested there. And so they have me down to the police station, and they charged me with assault with a deadly weapon. And meanwhile, while they're booking, they said, well, yeah, you also, stole 24 Berkeley Farms milk crates. That's his third strike. So, turns out what we did was every day, because the cops took our tables, we would borrow these milk crates to serve off of as a table. And if the cops didn't take the milk crates, we just took them back to the vegetarian restaurant we borrowed them from. But they now got me on three strikes, 25 years to life. So, they asked for $500,000 bail. Of course, we got it down to $75,000, but still they wouldn't accept the bail once it was finally raised. And eventually I have a trial date. Turns out to be the same day as the O.J. Simpson trial. About 200 people show up. I'm in a plexiglass box, bulletproof box, so that everybody's safe. The judge is like, no, this is crazy. We can't have a trial of the day. There's too many people here, too much of a ruckus. Why don't we choose another day? So they choose October 31st. So we come down to what we call unmasked corporate greed action. About 200 people show up. Again, I'm in the plexiglass bulletproof box. There's riot police around the courtroom. We go to all the different judges' chambers and clerk's offices. Take the trick or treat candy, and we go out to the courthouse, get arrested, handing it out. The judge thinks it's too chaotic. He chooses another day, which is February 14th. We come down with a shot of his heart, and hand him out in front of the courthouse, we get arrested. That judge thinks it's too crazy, and he sends him to another judge. She happens to be Judge Lucy McKay, and she was fantastic. She's alcoholic, she was already completely drunk by 9 o'clock. She says, lawyers are all a bunch of crooks, you can't trust any of them. She orders them to settle the case, say this is ridiculous. So she says, why don't you just tell the mayor you're a convicted felon? That way you can go to cocktail parties and say, heck, he's a felon. And we'll drop all your charges. I have 45 felony conspiracies to free food charges. I have 3 drug cases. He said, well, we'll give you credit for time served right after your own probation and requirements yourself. And we'll see you later. workshops, like how to cook vegan meals for 100, how to make decisions using consensus, how to do composting, organic gardening, how to make a banner, how to make an FM radio transmitter, and how to, you know, the issues of sexism, racism, and homophobia in the world, things like that. And after the gathering, people went back to their communities super psyched because they've been in jail for 2 months, they get to do jail solidarity, they did all, you know, met people from all over the world, and that just increased Funabom's and that whole magnitude of organizing. And then I got a fax from this man in Spain asking if he can translate Funabom's book into Spanish. And we agreed to do that, and we go on a book tour to Spain. Turns out, and I went to Germany and other, you know, many countries in Europe, and I met people working against the Maastricht Treaty and in Europe. And they were telling me about the World Trade Organization and how they're trying to get help organize against that, and that they've been doing blockades with their meetings in Europe. And so we agreed to organize another tour of the United States and Canada. We call it the Unfree Trade Tour. And 3 people, anti-globalization activists from Spain, came over and went to another 60 cities. We were advocating that if the WTO ever had a meeting in the United States or Canada or Mexico, we would go there and just shut it down. And so about a year after the tour, which was also broadcast on Little Pirate Radio and stuff like that, we hear that the WTO is going to meet in Seattle in November of 99. So we contact Global Exchange and the Council on Canadians, labor unions that we thought were progressive, Vandana Shiva, the people with the International Forum on Globalization. We said, let's all like go to Seattle and shut it down. Seattle Funabom rented a convergence space. We cooked meals. We, like, by this time, Mini Meeting had self-publishing software that had been created. And so about 80,000 or more people showed up, and huge, amazing actions happened to shut down, attempt to shut down the WTO. And a little bit after that action, I get an email from this woman in Australia. She works with this TV company called SBS TV. But she just completed a documentary that she worked on for 2 years about these Earth First activists trying to stop a gold mine on Aboriginal land. And her group, she said, Food Not Bombs, was serving food to these protesters for 2 years. And she said, are there any Food Not Bombs in other countries? Because she's met like Sydney and Adeline and the Melbourne chapters and stuff, and heard that there was one in Brisbane and a couple in Tasmania. I said, yeah, there's like chapters in other places besides Australia. He said, well, I've got to come interview you. And I said, well, you know, you can interview me, but the more interesting thing might be to visit the chapters in the U.S. and Canada and Mexico. So she comes over, and we travel around, and we videotape people. You know, we go, like, collect food with local chapter, we cook, we serve, we interview the people eating with us. And then during this 45-day tour, she finds out she won an award for her first documentary, and she has to go up to Spain. And I find out that the book, Funabom's book, is now in Italian, and they want me to do a book tour there. So we can go back over to Europe. And the first town we go to, we decide we're going to meet in Zagreb. So we go to Zagreb, and that group had just served 1,000 meals outside the U.S. Embassy in protest of the war in Iraq. And so they had like, this amazing cart that they brought out that was an awning that said Funabom's in Croatian. Half of it was for the literature, half was for the food. Then they said, well, why aren't you just meeting with Zagreb Funabom's? You should meet with all the other 6 chapters in Croatia. And I'm like, wow, I didn't even know there were 6 other cities in Croatia, let alone split up Funabom's. So then we hang out with them, and then they turn us on to the chapters in Serbia, Bosnia Herzegovina. We do an anti-McDonald's action on October 16th in Belgrade. The people in the McDonald's came out and go, yeah, this McDonald's sucks. This is great. What you guys are doing. It was like an amazing event. They told us the stories about like to serve free food on the bridges over the Danube as the U.S. was bombing them. So there was like a very interesting version of Food Without Bombs that was actually serving vegan meals to protesters. They painted targets on their t-shirts and stuff and would lay on the bridge with the cruise missiles would come on. And you can see still buildings all bombed out. and in Bosnia. So then we found out about the Romanian chapters. They said, well, we're not poor here in Serbia. The Romanians are very poor. So go meet the Buna Mosque at 6. So we go and meet them, and then we go over to Budapest, and that chapter served twice a week in front of the main train station, but they were also getting buckets of water, watering all the big oak trees on the boulevards because there was a drought. Then we went to Copenhagen. They had just won the Danish Peace Award. We visited chapters in Belgium. We visited chapters in throughout England. We went over to Ireland. There was 11 chapters there. We did an action at the Shannon Air Base where we fed the protesters blockading the U.S. planes coming that would stop at Shannon on their way with troops to Iraq and Afghanistan. The Belfast chapter was half Protestant background, half Catholic background. They served right on the border between the two communities every week. They were like really popular there. We went over to Sweden. We met the kid that was shot by the police during the G8 meeting. He was also the founder of Fundam Bombs in Sweden. We went to Poland, and they found there was 12 cities that had Fundam Bombs. Warsaw had 12 chapters. They all made benefit CD albums. They had learned about Fundam Bombs from a Profane Existence article that they read about the Minneapolis chapter being arrested in the United States. They made aprons that said Fundam Bombs with the logo in Polish. They had little chef's hats. They were like full-time Fundam Bombs. That's all they did. And then we went to Slovakia. The chapters down there, there's 24 chapters in Slovakia. Each chapter started an animal rescue shelter in their community. My presentation was broadcast live on national TV and radio. We visited the Prague chapter. They still were serving in the same train station they have been for now since about 89. We went over to Turkey, to Istanbul. We did the Fundam NATO action. And there, we served in front of the first McDonald's in the Muslim world. The first guy in line turned out to be the manager of the McDonald's. He turned to everybody and said, this is great food. And then he went in and he had all his employees come out with trays of ice cream and Coke and gave it away for free to everybody. And then after that, we went to Tel Aviv and we met Fundam Bombs kids there. The day before we arrived, Fundam Bombs had been involved in an action called the Anarchists Against the Wall. Fundam Bombs had been serving food for several months on the West Bank at a peace camp, became friends with Palestinian farmers who ended up being blocked from going to their harvest. So Fundam Bombs kids talked to the anarchist community in Israel. They went over, agreed to go over on the 26th of December to the Palestinian side where the gate was locked with bolt cutters. They tried to cut the fence open. The Israel Defense Forces started shooting live ammunition at them. One of their volunteers, Glenn, got hit by two bullets. He had just been out of the Israel Defense Forces himself for less than a month when he got shot by his comrades. And this was huge news. Then a couple of days later, we served food outside of Knesset at a protest with a bunch of other environmental organizations urging the Knesset to pass a law labeling all genetically modified foods in Israel. And at the end of the day, they ended up passing such a law. And then we did things like fed homeless, like there's a lot of Russians that live on the streets in Israel, and we're feeding them. We were feeding people at the Palestinians at the checkpoints. We planted all the trees along an area where the wall was going to be. And then I came back to the United States, and I got a call from this woman, Cindy Sheehan. And she was camping outside of George Bush's summer home. And she wanted to know why her son Casey had been killed in Iraq. And she calls me up and says, I've been out here like all week, and I brought candy bars, and I'm really hungry, and we're wondering if you guys have heard some veterans of peace that you might be able to get some food. So we got the Houston chapter showed up the next day. We mobilized the Fundam Bombs squad. We got a bunch of volunteers filled with food and showed up 24 hours later and set up a kitchen at Camp Casey. And during the month of August, while that was happening, we met her lawyers. And they were in New Orleans, and they told us about this hurricane coming towards New Orleans. So we went on the Veterans for Peace bus, and we made like a website because they had a satellite hookup called FundamBombs.net Katrina. And we emailed all the chapters, just see what we can do. Maybe we could all bring food and volunteers and kindred equipment and start kitchens so about the end after the hurricane passes. And so, sure enough, David from Hartford Food Hub Moms gets down to the military checkpoint the day after the hurricane, just south of Baton Rouge, and they say, "Oh wow, you guys need a letter of permission. You can't go down in there and you know, with this food." So David calls me up, "We need a letter of permission, we need a letter of permission." So I go on my computer, I make some Food Hub Moms letterhead, I say, "Please, you know, allow our volunteers to come down and help with this relief effort," and I sign it, and I make a PDF, an email to him, he prints it out, puts it in the bus, and they just let it right through. So we mail that to all the Food Hub Moms people that are going down with their buses. We have like this, I put it in my bus, we put it on the website so you could download it if you wanted to, we found that you were being blockaded. And so we ended up setting up kitchens in 20 cities in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, and we fed refugees over at the Astrodome and the Henderson Convention Center. The Red Cross gave out our number as the official number for the food. We talked with the New Orleans City Council, the emergency management agencies of those states every day, and we stayed down there for 8 months providing the food for all the people that chose to stay or were unable to leave from Hurricane Katrina. And but then, just not long after that, we have another Food Hub Moms gathering in the United States. There was one in August in the Ukraine. Food Hub Moms in Russia is in like 60 cities. Our volunteers actually in Russia in St. Petersburg, one of our volunteers, Timur, was stabbed to death by neo-Nazis while serving food in 2005. Another volunteer was stabbed and served in Siberia at an anti-nuclear camp. And the movement just grew in Eastern Europe. So there was one huge gathering in the Ukraine in August. And then in March in Nashville, we had a national Food Hub Moms gathering in the US. And several hundred people showed up. And because the economy was already really starting to crash, from our perspective, serving every day or every week, we decided that we would not only, we had several agenda items. One of the workshops was on how to bring food to the protesters protesting mountaintop removal. Another was to take food to the blockades of the NAFTA superhighway. And the other was to deal with the increase of hunger and poverty due to the economic crisis. And so we decided at that gathering that we would try to increase the number of days that we serve, that we try to get more Food Hub Moms chapters started, that we would start Food Hub, there's more Food Hub Moms gardens, that we would start really as many really, really free markets as we possibly could, that we would try to get hometown jails going again in as many cities as possible. And so the next month, food prices went up 70%, over 800 million more people went without food as a direct result of that. And not long after that, we started hearing in the news things like by that September, there was like, you know, global economic crisis. So that summer, we did start many Homes Not Jails groups. We started Food Hub Moms community gardens in over 60 more cities than we had the year before. And really, really free markets started happening like all over the world after that. And so now, Food Hub Moms is in at least 1,000 cities of the world. Iceland, I was getting emails about how people thought it was so funny we're serving food in such a rich country. And then the economy crashes and Food Hub Moms, which is serving every Saturday in front of the main train station, becomes national heroes. They did climate change action at an Alcoa mine in solidarity with the Tasmanian chapters that were doing a climate change protest against clear cutting. I got emails from the Santiago, Chile Food Hub Moms chapter about their new website. The Bogota, Colombia chapter sent me a YouTube link to their music video about doing graffiti and feeding people in Bogota. The Alice Springs Food Hub Moms, which is all Aboriginal kids, feeding Aboriginal people in Ayers Rock in Central Australia. They emailed me and wanted me to be a friend on their MySpace or whatever it's called. Things like that. Now Food Hub Moms is like really cranking. So now it's like so cool that there's so many chapters in Southern California. And so what we, if I don't know if we have that video about the bombs in Nigeria that we can show. Do we know how to do that?